Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Alexa, who is Adam Ferrara?
Adam Ferrara is an American actor and comedian known for playing the roles of Chief Needles Nelson on Rescue Me, Sergeant Frank Fiorelli opposite Edie Falco on Nurse Jackie. He was a co-host on the U.S. version of Top Gear. And his current stand-up special is called It's Scary in Here. It's available for you free on YouTube. Adam's new podcast is a big hit and available everywhere.
Sounds like it could be funny.
Sounds to me like 30 minutes you'll never get back.
Oh, I want to thank you guys so much for joining us here at Abbey Normal Recording Studios. You are among friends, and whatever's bothering you, you can put it down now. We'll make you laugh. Forget about your problems by laughing at mine. How's that? And we got a great show for you this week. My guest in the ADD interview is stand-up comedian, three-time Emmy Award-winning actor. You know him from Everybody Loves Raymond. It's my pal, Brad Garrett. And we want to welcome everyone from our Talk to Me Tuesday family. That is our conversation we have every week, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Go to my website, click the link, and join our conversation. And our superfan shout-out is for Sam Williamson. Say hi to Sam, everybody.
Hey, Sam.
Sam, how you doing, buddy?
And Sam, Phil would like to say hello.
I got no time for this shit now.
But he's very busy.
It's good to hear from
Phil.
Very,
very busy. So we will get back. We're going to hear from Phil a little bit later in the program. And I would like to begin today's proceedings by announcing that apparently my wife thinks I have control issues.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, you know, I disagree. Why are you laughing?
I don't know.
I don't have
the best judge of if you have control issues or not.
I don't think I do. So just if look, as long as you do whatever I tell you to do, we'll be all right.
Okay. Case closed.
Okay. I will tell you this. I think I understand why you said that. Now, let me explain to Stern and then the rest of the audience. I asked you to do something yesterday. My wife was very gracious and she has patience. So she was filling out this thing online that we had to fill out. And she kept asking me questions. Now, I have no patience. So if you're going to ask me a question, I got to answer the question. The anxiety just in my head just rises up. And it's easier for me just to do it myself than
right.
to answer a question. And then, no, get up. I'll do it. And so she lives with a lunatic.
Well, the key phrase is you asked me to fill out a form.
Yes.
And I started filling out the form.
Yes.
Asking you the questions on the form.
Then I don't need that. I don't need that. I lost it. I said, here, I don't need that. Here's what I need. Do this. Do this because I don't want to do this.
Exactly. And when I start doing it, you lose it.
Yeah, because you're asking me the questions that are on the form. I go, I can do that. I want this out of my reality right now.
Well, I'm sorry I don't have the factual details memorized that are in your head, Adam.
Fine, I accept your apology.
Well, that was a wonderful Hallmark moment.
Yeah, I'm glad we can settle that.
Yeah, well, this is the real deal.
Go ahead.
Here's the thing. I'm able to multitask. Adam is a monotasker.
I can do one thing at a time. Here's the thing. I do one thing at a time. I do it very well. And then I move on.
Okay. I didn't say you didn't do it well.
Okay.
That's where your ADD comes in. And I get it. You need to stay hyper-focused to not lose your place and think of something else.
Fair enough.
I'm just saying that if you open up to different possibilities, you let more creativity in.
I'm sorry. I was looking at Stern. I wasn't listening to you. I was focused.
there was a butterfly in the back of the room. Sorry. I was distracted.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
No, I get it. It's a bit of a control.
See. You keep saying control. And
you need control to feel in control.
No. Here's the deal. I gotta get everything done, right? And when I say I mean things have to get done, okay?
This is it.
Go ahead.
You have a list,
yes.
And you need to cross it off.
Yeah.
Which helps you with order.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Without order, there's chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Your ADD brings chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, you need to hyper-focus on one thing at a time, which I get.
See, here's the thing. If I got to answer the question, it's easier for me just to do the damn thing. So I don't know if it's control as much as it's trying to keep my anxiety at bay.
Oh, no, it's control.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I found a list. Let's see if it applies to you, Adam.
A list of what?
Control issues.
Okay.
Signs. Great.
One, can he fill out a form? Okay.
One is self-centeredness.
Mm.
You do come in a room quite loud.
Well, that's just personality.
You own the room, Adam. Good for you.
That's good. Okay.
All right.
I don't know if it's self-centered. I'll give you this. I do have a big personality. I'll tell you that.
Well, I do think people of your field, you know, actors and comedians, they automatically have that desire to come in the room hot, we'll say.
We'll call it a push because self-centered, because I do care about other people to the point.
Well, I'm not saying you don't. I'm just saying, you know.
All right. What's the next one?
Jealousy.
I'm not jealous. I'll kill anyone who tries to take my place.
That's just normal
That's normal. That's normal. Okay. Yeah. Next.
Okay. Mood swings.
What?
Upbeat 1 minute and upset and irritable the next. I would say that goes into form filling. Here, I'm helping you out. And then I'm like, no, get away.
Yeah, I get it. I wish that wasn't true, but okay, go ahead.
It's
next.
Too bad you had a free secretary.
Yeah.
Okay. So possessiveness, which I really don't get.
Possessiveness?
What does that mean? You're possessive?
I think it means you're mine and I don't want to share it with anybody else. So.
Maybe that's control, like you don't want to give something up, fear of losing something.
I don't know. Stern, am I possessive?
I think you like to be, you like to have things under the realm of your control. Like, yeah. And so if like possessing things, you know, cause you have a vision in your head, I think a lot of times how you want things to go. And it's easier if you have them under your control. So if that's possessiveness, sure.
Okay. Clearly Mark doesn't understand the question either. What's next?
I'm a great bullshitter.
You're just sitting there going.
By the way, you just got treated to every day for me in high school. Mr. Stern, what's the answer?
Yeah.
Let me spin some bullshit now.
Yeah, he just read his essay answer on his test to me. That's
okay, the next one kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Fear of being abandoned.
Okay.
Fear of being alone.
Yeah, I'll take it. Yeah. I don't, you guys don't want to be with me. You really think I want to be with me?
Which,
okay, go ahead.
Well, everybody has that kind of fear, I think, though.
All right.
Maybe more extreme. That's what makes it more of a control issue.
Mm.
And finally,
mm-hmm.
unaccepting of responsibility or accountability for their actions.
No, I beat myself up. I take responsibility for everything. That's why I get it done. This is my fault. Yeah. And by the way, that's Catholicism. So thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
But Father Dominic, thank you. Thank you for doing that to me.
Adam, it comes down to this. You either choose fear,
right,
or you choose love, which means fear, you have control issues, or love, you have faith and trust.
That's pretty good, honey.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to come from love. I'm admitting I'm coming from fear. And the third choice is never fill out a form in this one.
Okay, you got it.
Yeah.
I hand you the pen.
That's the lesson. Here endeth the lesson.
Yeah. But she's right. You know, fear control is it's all fear based. Mm-hmm. So you are absolutely right. It was funny because I was talking to Phil and he was asking me about asking questions as well. So yeah, you guys listen to this.
Hey, let me ask you a question.
What?
Do I ask too many questions?
Okay. What happened?
See? Okay. So right away. He's fear based because he's like, uh-oh, so I'm in trouble.
Right. It's just the beating yourself up, the self paranoia. It's great. Yeah. Do I ask too many questions?
Yeah. And here's why.
What happened?
I go down to the theater. I have sound check at 5:00. I go to the theater. There's no one there. There's no crew. The only one there was a dancer who's part of the production cast who's supposed to open for me.
Right.
So I go to her and I go, hey, where is everybody? She goes, they all have COVID. And then she walks away. I'm like, wait a minute. Hold on. You just can't say everybody has COVID and then walk away. Are we doing a show? What are we? How do you just walk away like that?
I'm sure it was a struggle for her.
She's the only one with the information right now. I got a show in an hour and a half. I'm not supposed to stand there and ask her questions. She actually can't be bothered to let me know what happened.
Phil, she's a 21-year-old dancer on a cruise ship. Where's the bar? That's the question she has the answer to.
Yeah. That was it. So Phil was like, I have a show. You have to help me figure this out. So Phil's like projecting that she's got the answer to the question.
To me, it's a little bit of a respect issue too, because obviously if she just turns and walks away and doesn't answer the question, I think that might be something we need to work on with Phil. That's certainly not helping his self-esteem issues, right. I would say.
Well, here's the second part of the conversation.
She just walked away. Do you know what that means?
It means she's just as aggravated with you as I am.
No, it means she's going to go tell everybody what just happened. Oh, my God, this comedian. That's what's going to happen. See? Now I need that.
Phil, she doesn't care. As soon as she walked away, that's where your relationship ended.
You don't know ship life. Everybody knows everything about everybody. I don't need that. I just don't need this shit. Why can't you just answer questions? It's a simple question. Is there going to be a show or not?
She doesn't have the answer, Phil. Why? Stop looking to other people to soothe your crazy. This is all in your head. She doesn't give a shit about you.
Unless he was on fire, I agree with you, Adam.
Yeah, he's like, he's worried she's going to go, this comedian just keeps asking me questions and questions. His name is Phil Tagg, T-A-G. I want to make sure you spell it correctly as we have him thrown off the ship. You know, I get it.
I just love that. He goes straight to, they're all going to be talking about me now.
Yeah, you don't know ship life. They're all out to get me.
Right. And
how great would it be if you called someone and said, hey, guys, at breakfast, everybody at once, look at Phil.
Yeah, just everyone just look at him. Don't say anything. Just turn around and look at him. Just have someone yell out, you got any more questions?
Hilarious.
But you know what? He does have his self-awareness. You know, it's fear-based, like you said, and he's afraid of what other people think. And he's a comic, so it's a common thing. But, you know, he's like, he's trying to figure out, is it him?
I just don't want to be aggravating. I don't want to bother people with questions. That's, I was just wondering, all kidding aside, is it me?
Yes, Phil, it's you.
Oh, my God.
See, so he does have that self-awareness. So I give him that. And it is fear-based. And I got it, too. Mm-hmm. You know?
I think Phil's got a little bit worse than most people. Yes, and I say that with all love, Phil.
I love my friend Phil. He's got it a little bit worse than most of us. I agree with you, Mark, but it doesn't stop me from exploiting it for my amusement. I have to tell you.
That's great.
I love my pal. And he's working on himself. He wants to change. Listen to this.
You know what? I'm not asking any more questions for the rest of my life. No more questions.
Great. Glad to hear it.
Are you playing this on the podcast?
You bet your ass I am.
Of course we are, Phil.
That is funny.
Yeah. So at least he knows. So at least, okay. So now I know that I may have control issues.
Okay.
Okay. I admit that I would rather live my life from love rather than fear. I'm working on it, but I think I'm a little bit steeped in fear. So I will admit that.
Okay.
And questions just drive me crazy.
Which ironically is brave.
What's brave?
What you just said.
I am. I'm very brave. I'm brave. I'm courageous. I'm handsome. I'm giving of others. I'm trying to be the best person I can be. You just don't see this. And that's what's so tragic.
There's that category, self-centeredness, right at the top of that list. Isn't that funny?
Have to circle this.
I'll try to be better, Adam.
Thank you. Thank you. You may live another day. But I'm not the only one who gets crazy if you ask a question. Brad Garrett was opening for Frank Sinatra when he was a kid. And he asked the question of Jilly, who was Frank's right-hand man. And Jilly didn't want to be asked any questions. It's a great story. It's a great interview. You guys listen to this, and we will see you on the other side.
A control freak is someone who has a compulsive need to have total control over every aspect of their life. Have you ever heard of the wise old saying, when you see someone who needs power and control and will not stop until they get it, you are seeing someone who is deeply afraid of life.
Is it me?
Yes, Phil, it's you.
You're listening to the Adam Ferrara podcast. This is 30 minutes you'll never get back.
These are longer than 30 minutes. Don't bullshit me.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Well, I'm back on the road, a busy July, and I hope you can come see me. If you're in San Francisco, I will be there tomorrow, July 1st, and Saturday, July 2nd at Cobb's Comedy Club. Then I'm going home to Strong Island, July 8th and 9th. I will be at McGuire's in Bohemia. I will be at Soul Joel's July 10th, and that is in Royersford, Pennsylvania. I'll be back to Uncle Vinny's July 22nd and 23rd in Point Pleasant, New Jersey. And July 30th, I will be at the Potawatomi Casino in Milwaukee. There's a link for tickets right here in the show notes, or you can go to my website and click the link there. We also have a link to t-shirts. We have a link to my special. And as always, if you can make any of these gigs, please come up after the show and let me shake your hand. I want to thank you for all the love and support that you've shown me and this podcast. All right, go on. Get out of here.
Pay attention when I'm talking to you, boy.
ADHD, it's not just for kids.
Nice boy, but doesn't listen to a word you say.
Welcome to the ADD interview. It's not that you're not interesting, it's just that I can't focus. And my guest this week is...
Oh, look, a bird!
My guest this week is a three-time Emmy Award-winning actor, a voice actor, poker player, comedian, comedy club owner, and someone who makes me laugh really, really hard. You know him from Everybody Loves Raymond, his TV series Till Death on Fox. He is currently starring alongside Patricia Arquette on the Apple TV series High Desert, as well as the upcoming movie Wildflower with Alexandra Daddario and Gene Smart. He is the pride of the turkey farm in Encino, and he once picked up dog shit in an elevator with a $20 bill. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my pal Brad Garrett. How are you, baby?
How are you, sir?
Great to see you, Adam.
You too. It's been a long time, my friend. Last time
it
I saw
has been
you,
a long time.
We were at this Emmy thing with you, Ray, Ray, me, Dennis, Leary. We're doing something, and you just you took that room and you put it in your palm of your hands and you squeezed it, and everyone just laughed.
I don't think that was me. It was Ray. It was Ray. Yeah. Oh, my wallet is so heavy. I need help picking it.
I have to hear the story because when I was reading about you picking up dog shit in an elevator with a $20 bill, I said that's the lead. That's what I want to hear about.
That's well, it was you know it was I have a small dog now, tiny Yorkie.
Right.
I was kind of a bigger dog person, but you know the new wife brought home the Yorkie.
Right.
And now I'm like. I can't leave this thing alone. It's odd.
Yeah.
And I was in an elevator in my apartment in Vegas, taking it down, you know, to the little dog run.
Right.
And it does its thing. Then I'm going up in the elevator, stops on a floor. This older couple gets in, and the dog takes another dump. Now it's a Yorkie, right? So it's the size of a button.
Right.
Right. So I already used the bag on the dog run and I don't have anything to friggin' pick it up. And the older couple is looking at me and I'm staring at them. And all I have, this is horrible, I know, is a 20. Is a 20. So I bend over, I pick up the dog shit with the 20. And the old guy looks at me. And he says, I once saw Raymond do that with 100. and I went, yeah.
Oh, all right. That's funny.
But it was like, wow, this guy should have a comedy club.
You should get him at your club. You're at the MGM now, right?
Yeah, we're at the MGM. Been there about 10 years.
I ran into you at the Mirage when you and Ray did the Mirage. The nice thing about seeing you and Ray together, and I was telling, actually, as I drop a name, I was telling Lenny Clark about this when we were doing...
Oh, I love him.
Yeah, the Rescue Me comedy tours, because I met Dennis as an actor. So we did two TV shows together before we were even toured as comics, and it's a different thing. You know, when I saw you and Ray as comics, I'm like, that's a different thing than being an actor.
Yeah.
When we were on the set, you know, there's a definite, it's not, you know, you're playing your part of the whole when you're an actor. When you're a comic, you just do comics, you know,
right.
And then you're helping. The word level playing field isn't right, but you're on a different context of being with each other, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And it really, you know, what's interesting, I mean, I'm so hacky. That's why I am. And I get it. That's why I had to buy my own club. I'm like, I can't get any time anywhere. They're like, Brad, we don't want to hear about Reagan talking about McNuggets anymore. So I said, I'll buy my own club. And Ray's like, 5 minutes a day. Just try to write something. Because, you know, I do the crowd work, which, you know, is it's taxing.
Yeah, but you can do it. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. People say, you know, guys like us, I can do it, you know, when I need to go. And now with social media, it's great because it's free material.
Yeah.
You know, it's the way we're doing it anyway. And the reason I like to do it and I like to watch you do it is it puts you in the audience in a state of becoming. We're in this thing together. You know,
that's what I think. I mean, you know, and also, you know, I'm not a great writer. 5 minutes a day. You know, it's like when I used to open for the big acts here 100 years ago.
Right.
You know, and I'm opening for, you know, these people that, you know, they never, obviously when you're an opening act, I mean, it's a great way to cut your teeth. But I would open for in the early days, I opened for Sinatra. Here's one of my first gigs in Vegas. And Jilly would go, just go out there. And when Frank is ready, he'll tug on the cord. And this all happened at the Desert Inn, and I would say, well, what do I do, 30 or 10? And he goes, you want the job? And I was like, yeah, all right, Greg, just go out there. They called me Greg Barrett I swear to you, for 3 years. And Frank would introduce me. He was very kind to all the comics. And I was just one of the guys. His main guy was Dreesen, obviously. But yeah. Frank would, he always would have a comic come out and take a bow. Mm-hmm. But he would go, Greg Barrett, everybody, Greg Barrett. And I didn't have the balls. You know, you don't correct him.
Right.
You take a bow to another name.
Right, you know, yeah.
Because it's Frank.
And yeah.
I went up to Jilly, like, after a year. I said, hey, Mr. Rizzo, can you just tell Mr. Sinatra, it's Brad Garrett. Do you want the job? I want to work or not? You want me to go? Why don't you go correct Frank? Have you ever corrected Frank? I said, all right. So, you know, my mom comes to the show, and she's like, why are they calling you Greg? We had to remove her eventually because she would yell, it's Brad's, Frank. It's Brad. I said, Mom, I'm going to end up in a box. Just please sit there. Be happy you're in the room. What are the chances of meeting Sammy?
Oh, we got the same mother, my friend. It just comes out.
It just, they can't help it.
Yeah. They're funny in the house. Was my mom's obviously funny, but it doesn't seem like she's aware of being funny. Was dad funny?
Yeah. Well, dad was really funny. You know, I got most of my humor from him, but my mom, you know, it was a different thing. I got my anxiety from her. When I was opening with Sammy once, I was like his last opening act before he passed. It's funny, Ray's like, why does everyone die after you open for him? I said, Ray, just go check on the butler. But I was with Sammy, and he was fighting throat cancer. Mm. But he played as much as he could, and he was very... you know, he would come out and he would go, you know, the chops aren't great, but we're gonna get through it. You know, so I tell my mom goes, I want to meet Sammy. You know how he's changed my life. I said, Mom, we're not doing the backstage thing anymore because, you know, when I opened for Steve and Edie, not that I'm name dropping, right. You know, you hit on Steve Lawrence. I can't find my mom, and she's in Steve Lawrence's dressing room going up on my third marriage. And Steve Lawrence's security is like, I couldn't find my mom. She goes, you know, he's in his, and Edie Gourmet is banging him. What's going on in this, Dave? You know, and my mom walks out, you know, with the leather pants and the orthopedic shoes, with the decollete top, you know, the blouse clowns hang. Never really, and I, you know, I loved her, but there was things, you know. So that was the last. That was the last time I could have her backstage, you know. But she goes, it's my dream to meet Sammy. All right. I said, okay, Mom, but it's hello. And and we just, please, you know, don't lick his forehead or do whatever you do. Because she would get, you know, she would go, you're my life. You know, that's it. And that night, he always had a great show. But, and I go, you know, just say great, good to me. And please, I said, I got 2 weeks with the guy. I'm just begging you, please, Mom.
Yeah.
And in those days, I couldn't say no to my mom. Now that she's dead, no problem. So she goes backstage. Sammy goes, Mrs. Garrett, which of course it wasn't. It was never Garrett for anybody. And he said, pleasure to meet you. Having a little trouble with the chops tonight. And she looks at him and goes, not every night is magic. I swear to you, this is my therapy from that night. You know, my therapist is like, why do you have your mom to these things? And I'm like, you know, how do you tell you, you know, so
yeah.
I'm fucked up. I'm dealing with a lot of it, but it was really, I go, why would you tell a legend not every night is magic? But he brought it up, you know, it was never, it was never her, you know, God rest his soul. But I, you know,
my mom did the same thing. There's no, but my father had that too. I was at, remember the American Comedy Awards?
Sure. Ray had me, like, you know, take him one night when he was not, right. I waited in the lobby. Yeah.
I got nominated, blew my parents out. And at the after party at they had at the Comedy Store. And I look over, and my father was getting older at the time, and he's all animated now. And that's the way I remembered him, Brad. I was like, look at my dad. Look, he's having a great time. And I turned around. There's a guy he was talking to, and it was Don Rickles. And the reason he was all animated, he was trying to sell Rickles a kitchen, because that's what he did.
Oh, this,
he did kitchen and bath.
This is amazing.
I walk over. My father's like, Don, you got to spend the money on the appliances. Put the money into the Sub-Z. He's like, yeah, oh, I need a Sub-Zero. All right. Their world is their world, and these people that come into it are in their world, so they feel comfortable talking to
them. Of course. Oh, yeah. That's the best. And how was Don with it? Probably gracious and wonderful.
He was so sweet. He was, first of all, I got nominated. I met him backstage because there was a crossing thing we had to do backstage. So I met him backstage, and he remembered me because I met him with Jeff Ross.
Okay.
We both walked in, and Rickles looked at us, and well, he knows we're looking at him. We're comics. And he looks at the both of us and goes, all right, kid, don't make it a thing. So he was just so – I got a picture of him, too. It was so gracious. And
obviously, one of my heroes. And
yeah.
We when the show was still on, Phil Rosenthal, Ray, all the writers, and me, we were having dinner in Malibu, and we were just eating, and we see out of the corner of our eye Rickles walks in, and we're like, oh, this is, you know, we're all such fucking fans of him. And he walks in and he clocks Ray. And I'm with who's now my wife at the time. This is about 12 years ago. And she's a bit younger. Okay.
Right.
I won't lie. And he walks over to the table. He goes, honey, were you kidnapped? he goes, Blake. Blink if you're kidnapped. And we were dying. And he looks at Ray and he goes, I'll never get it, but I'm happy for you. And then he looks at Phil and he goes, enough Jews here, Phil? Enough Jews at the table? And he's doing it the way Don does it. And it's a small restaurant and everyone's dying. And he comes up to me and he goes, I got a good idea, Brad. We're going to put an elevator in your ass and make you a building. So, you know, we're in heaven. It's like, oh, my God, Don made fun of us. But there was no one obviously like him, you know, God.
Yeah. But he touched that nerve. And you did that for me because you were in two productions of my favorite two TV shows of all time, The Odd Couple and The Honeymooners. You played Murray the Cop on Broadway with Nathan Lane and Broderick.
Thank you.
And that and The Honeymooners, you not only played Gleason, you got an Emmy nomination for playing Gleason.
Yeah,
and those two shows informed the way the communication in my house. Like that was a reflection of my house. The yelling, that kind of friendship where they're driving each other crazy, but you still love each other, and you could still see that. We were children of TV, and what I wanted to ask you is, did Gleason speak to you, and did Neil Simon speak
to you? You know, I really didn't get into Gleason until later through my father, and through, you know, and he turned me on to Groucho Marx, you know. But it was, you know, it was You Bet Your Life, and I was like, this guy is so quick. This guy's unbelievable. Yeah. But it was all in the family for me is when, you know, I was 12, I was sitting there. And I was going, I can't believe what this guy is saying and doing. This is so great. This is so real. And I remember, you know, even that young, I was a crier, you know, growing up. I was a real pussy, Adam. You know, that's why I never played ball. I was 9 feet at 11. And you know, I had a coach go, let's go to a court one day and just dribble around. And I'm like, not in the face, you know. Play ball. I was couldn't make a layup. Literally 6 feet at 12, though, and couldn't play any ball. So my point was, you know, I had to find. I always made fun of myself because I was picked on and bullied miserably because I was a wuss. So my thing was, I would always make fun of myself, you know, to kind of beat the bullies, you know, to the punch, and then I would say something about, you know, the bully and come home with the black eye, and you know. And my mom was like, they beat you up because they're jealous. You know?
Yeah, I got
that. It really never made sense to me. And I go, I don't think that tracks, Mom. But have another whiskey and close your rope.
Yeah. Well, that was because that was interesting because you were physically imposing as a kid.
Yeah.
I was a little boy. This is Brett. Years before I became a little man. So the humor for me was a defense mechanism to not get, you know, picked on a bit. But it was the same thing for you, although you were physically larger. So I guess it's the same kind of ingrained thing of where do I fit? How do I defend myself? You know,
and also when you have parents that struggle, you know, my dad was like married 6 times. My mom was married 3. When you have parents that are struggling emotionally, mentally, you know, we try to make them laugh. We try to fix them as kids. It's a tough position to be in. And I owe my parents a lot. So there's nothing but love. But took me a long time to get there. But my dad was incredibly supportive. But the point is, a lot of us get into the arts because we end up trying to, I think, entertain our family to soothe shit that's going on. And that was, you know, that was my thing. You know, I kind of raised them later in life. And
I got it because that's how, Brett, I could fit in. Like, okay, I can make this better situation. I don't know how I'm doing it, but I'm doing it.
Sure.
And that's why when I saw you play Gleason, I have a big affinity for Gleason because that was my dad. He was this big,
really,
that's guy. Yeah. And he would. So I was looking for a reflection. I wasn't looking for an escape in my childhood. I was looking for a reflection in the TV, and I found it in Gleason. And I found it in The Odd Couple. And I read for Murray when the cop. I read for, and it was my first, it was Broadway, it was Neil Simon. I was like, ah, great.
Oh,
and
you then would, I got another great Murray. You'd be a
they wouldn't have saw me. I'm only this big. But I'm
only, no, you really would.
But when you got it, I went, that's the guy I want to see play. And then Rob Bartlett played it as well, another friend of mine.
Oh, he's terrific.
You guys, to be able to do that. And to be able to communicate that kind of what I saw in my house was a great gift to someone watching it. And I think when Raymond has done that for so many people, just because of the sensibilities. And when what I read was when you went to read for Ray's brother, you were playing it a totally different way. They were looking for like a Danny DeVito type.
Yeah, they really were. And, you know, Ray was like, she's too big. This is what's so great. You know, I love his honesty. And we're so close to this day. I swear to God, with all his success, and I know you know him, he had changed one iota. He's the same great, gracious, humbled guy. And he's like, you know, I only know him from Star Search, you know, I'm worried, you know, in Star Search, I'm like, what if Cosby was a pilot, you know, but I knew who Robert was and it was a very, very different take. And it was, you know, I got very, very lucky. I mean, you got to have luck. You got to have, it's funny when Ray came to the premiere of Gleason, when they premiered it, he showed up and they go, and he looks at me, he goes, they should have called it Gleason the NBA years. I said, you can't be happy for me for one friggin' minute. You can't be happy for me. No, it's like Gleason, it's like you're ducking getting in the doorway. You know? But it was amazing because they had, after one day of shooting, they were like, you know, we got to, and I said, if I come off this large, I'm going to come off as a bully. And I'm saying, you know, Gleason was never a bully. He was just a big kid having a tantrum.
Yeah.
And I said, if I dwarf everyone, you know, I'm going to really, when I go after Alice or I go after Norton, it's not going to have the same thing. So Howie Deutsch, who was directing, he was like, well, I hate to say this, but we got to build up the furniture and we got to put the rest of the cast in boots. And it looks like everyone was leaving a Kiss concert. It was, they were all wearing these crazy platforms, you know, and Saul Rubinek, who played Bullets, my manager, you know, he's like 5'6". And, you know, we were doing a scene in the snow. If you look at one of the scenes where we leave the restaurant, he literally slips going down the stairs because of these friggin' boots they put everyone in. And of course, he played it off brilliantly. But it was really funny because I was not the first by any means choice that CBS wanted to play Gleason. I was, I couldn't even, they wouldn't even let me audition because Les Moonves, as great as he was to me, he just didn't see it. And, and I get that, you know, I get that. So, they hired, you know, they went after Goodman, who I would have, and Oliver Platt, and brilliant guys. They didn't want to do a TV movie. And then they went to Mark Addy, who's a funny guy who had a series on CBS at that time, but he was British. And it just didn't, it didn't work out. And Les called and said, you know, can you be in Montreal in 40 hours? You know, they didn't have my, the wardrobe, and we, you know, I had to hire my own makeup guy to really, cause you know, they didn't, the budget was lean and I it was a chance of a lifetime, but it was a lot of fun. It was,
He was, Gleason, he was really into UFOs too.
Yes. Gleason. Yes, he was.
He had the roundhouse up in upstate New York. He had the roundhouse.
That's right.
And he was really into UFOs. And Nixon took him to like an Air Force base because he was playing golf. One of the books I read. He's playing, and Nixon took him to an Air Force base in the middle of the night to show him the aliens and shit.
Is that right?
Yeah, according to this book, you know, he was. But then again, Nixon was throwing him back too. So
Yeah. You know. Yeah.
All right. How about just take out 18 minutes? How's that? You know.
Exactly.
But you got that role. Nobody saw you in it, but you knew it was a chance of a lifetime. You lobbied for it, and then you did it your way, and it came to you. Well, that's from an outsider looking in, Brad. That's like it's not only it's an example, but it's balls. You know, you got balls to do that.
Thank you. Well, you know, you have to in this business. You know, it's. I mean, you know this. We've been at it a long time. It seems almost impossible to break in nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many talented people out there, and you know, people go on audition and they go, "How many followers do you have on Instagram?" And that's the first question by casting people, which doesn't really mean a damn thing. You know, it never translates to numbers or ratings or anything else. And, you know, the social media has taken over like crazy. That being said, television has never been better. And I think the auspices that are running to it, it's brilliant.
Yeah. I was looking at the product that's coming out and, you know, there is no... Well, you say, how many followers do you have? You know, David Koresh had some too. Didn't end well.
Yeah.
But, and you're discounting what the other person's job is, the casting director's job is. You know, don't pick someone just because you won't get fired if you choose them. You know, pick somebody because they fulfill a vision, you know, and that risk taking isn't there anymore. So when you say break in, I've adopted the perspective of it's not breaking in, it's doing what you do. It's Field of Dreams shit. Build it, let them find you. You know?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. But
and you're building it in Vegas with the club in Vegas, and you're still working. You still do movies and TV, and you're a gambler, and you live in Vegas. Ballsy, Garrett.
I live in Vegas, and I don't drink, and I live in Vegas. I've been sober 20.
Well, that's going to change soon. I can say.
There are days where I go, "What am I really doing this for?" I had a real grip on the grape, so I've been clean about 25 years. But I gamble. I play little, you know, little poker, poorly. But I do that. But I just love having a club. I've always, you know, I've always said if I ever can swing it, I would love to have a club that's built for comics to kind of make up for all the shitholes we've played in our lives. We're going to build a great, you know, a great theater, and we're going to just treat them the way we should be treated. And that way the shows will be great and we're having a good time. And you must come out. You must. I know you're expensive, but we'll work it out. You know, we'll work it out.
You pay me. Look, I'll take it. Here's the thing with chips is I lose. I like a crap table, so it goes quick.
Yeah,
I like
but that's fine. Like, oh, it's fine.
When you get, Brad, when you're on a roll at a crap table, it always reminds me of the villages in a Frankenstein movie. Everyone's just like all together, like, burn the monster. You know, we're just going to go.
I get that everywhere I go. I get that at, you know, Golden Corral. See what I did? Okay.
You still love doing it?
I love it.
Still,
yeah. You know, it's the only thing, in, as you know, in this business that you're totally alone. You know, you live or die by it, you know, and it's just, I love doing it. I'm that insecure that I'm doing it 40 years later.
But, me too. It still gives me that little dopamine hit of, okay, this you'll be right. This is how you can contribute.
It's you gotta be.
I do love doing it, like you said, because we're the writer producer and it does give us that connection. But I also love being on a set when it's working well in that creative environment. And you guys, I'm sure you felt it. I mean, nobody knows if something's going to be a hit or not, but you can feel it making it if you can connect. And it just, my question to you is, did you have that feeling? Because it certainly looked like you did.
You know, it's funny. Halfway through the first season, you know, we were kind of like, there's something here, you know? And I think what it was this chemistry where the timing is the family was almost immediate. And it was interesting. You know, I had never met Ray before the show. He'd never met, you know, we didn't know each other from the road. Peter obviously came from movies. Doris was from TV and theater. And Patty, you know, had done a lot. But we were all so different, but it just gelled. The key to the show was the writing. They were just brilliant writers. You know, we got real lucky. And, they just knew how to write humor that came from character as opposed to just jokes. You know, Phil Rosenthal would start the writer's room every Monday with, he'd go around the table. What happened this weekend? What happened in your house? And it would, you know, so much of the episodes came from, you know, the family dynamic that each writer was living. And so, you know, it was lightning in a bottle. I know how lucky to this day I was. And it was just, it was a good group of folks. I know everybody says, oh, we were like a family. And most of the time it's bullshit. But we really were. We were very close. And I think a lot of it is because we were very different from each other. There was never that weird competition. I think we all felt very grateful. And I think that's the key to everything is, you know, keeping your humility through it, because boy, it's easy to change you. It's easy to change you when you go from nothing to everybody giving a shit out of the blue. You just got to remind yourself it will pass, it will go. And, you know, it's like what I tell guys that are starting out that'll come to the club, I go, are you making a living as a stand-up? And they'll go, yes. And I'll go, well, remember what that meant when you were 14. That's all you wanted. And if you can make a living doing what you love, you have more going on than 99% of that audience you're going to walk in front of, because very few people get that gift of doing what they love, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's a business that beats you up.
I think you have to get beat up to experience and have the felt sense of what you're saying, because it's just words if you haven't done it first. You have to you have to make the mistakes, but limit the damage to yourself and your family.
Because it's very true.
You know, because I'm so grateful now at this phase, Brad, because I know what it's like to not have it, and I know what it's like to think that's who I was instead of something I experienced. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know? Because it's, you know, I know it sounds trite or corny, and maybe a lot of that comes with age, but you know, as I look back, as we all look back, you know, I mean, you've worked in this business forever. You're gifted, but you've swung hard, and you know, you got to do what you loved, and you gave your family and other people and strangers a lot of joy. This world needs it now more than ever. I know that sounds trite, but boy, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, it's. I think there's, and like I'm going to go back to the television and the families that where I was looking for a reflection of my life is the sense of community and the sense of connection
well put.
Is gone because you can dial up any reality you want right
I
now.
I know it. I know it.
You know,
it's true. It's very, very true. And that's sad. You know, that's.
Yeah.
But, you know, that you mentioned the Odd Couple. I'm going to show you this because you will appreciate this picture.
Walter Matthau, Jack Lemmon, and Neil Simon. Holy, that's great. Where'd you get that? That's beautiful.
I'm going to get you one of those. I'm going to try to find it. I'm going to try to find it. And I'm going to send you one of those because there's this amazing photographer who took that.
Right.
And I'm going to reach out to him.
Oh, that's great. I had Nathan Lane on the show.
Did you really?
Oh, what a sweet man.
My fucking hero.
He was so cool to me. First of all, I changed my shirt twice before the interview. My wife was laughing at me because I wanted to look good for Nathan.
What a fucking icon he is.
Yeah, and he explained to me that when he read Neil Simon, he heard the music, you know. And one of the things that I always admired about you was, and you're not from the East Coast, but you hear that music. That is your...
Got that from my pop, yeah. My dad was a Bronx guy.
So was that where you got it? Because I knew you grew up in California.
I grew up in California. My dad was from the East, and I just always had that. The first time I ever went to New York, I was 18, and I know it sounds corny. I felt so at home. It was the I never felt really comfortable in my skin ever. I don't think that's probably why we do what we do. But there was just something about New York. It's like everyone spoke my language. I got it, and. Yeah, working with Nathan, I was at first so intimidated because I was such a fan. And then I met him and I went, wow, this guy is pretty amazing. I swear to you, Adam, the first day we rehearsed, he was off book.
Wow.
The entire play. And I went, you know, he's got that mind and he's really a genius. But he's got that photograph. And he said, I knew this dialogue from when I was a kid, because I always wanted to play this. And I was like, oh my, and I'm working on my lines. And this was, you know, this is 20 years ago, 21 years ago. And, you know, he has a real work ethic, Nathan, that is comparable to his talent. So it's up there and he is committed. And I've always, and so by him not holding a script from day one, I'm like, I really better, you know, get my shit together. I was doing Raymond at the time, so I had that muscle of memorizing stuff. Opening fucking night, I forget my second line. Okay? Opening night, and it's at the poker table. And he looks at me because it was his cue, and he's looking at me, and I look to Rob Bartlett, you know, who's doing this, because they're all stage people. And I'm like, I can't feel my legs. I thought I just forgot my line. I got wrapped up in it. I was nervous. I won't lie. Yeah. And Nathan looked at me like, I'm going to kill your mother and eat her. But what a genius he is. He was able to jump another line that was my cue to just get me back on track. So it wasn't like a deer in the headlight because it was the poker scene. So nobody really knew. And to this day, you know, I joke about it. He's like, you got to let it go, you know, because, you know, I have nightmares. I literally had nightmares about going up on opening.
Yeah.
Nothing. But, you know, just to be in a scene with him and to watch it it changed me. You know, it really, really changed me because, I think there's nothing like theater. And I think for like what you and I do, it just, you know, it encompasses everything we love. It's live. Sure. It's in the moment. It's different every night. I mean, every night something would kill a line. But just to meet Neil Simon and have him, you know, have him do the first few rehearsals with us was such a treat. Another guy who called me Greg. Yeah. But, you know, Neil, you know, you're not going to correct Neil.
That's true. Well, it's funny you said about what we do and theater. I never have done theater. I took it because when I was doing Nurse Jackie with all the theater people.
Yeah.
You know, Edie Falco, Steve Wilson, all theater.
Such an amazing show that was.
Yeah.
And she's a peach, isn't she?
The sweetest woman.
Incredible.
She sent a card to my mother. I mean, who does?
Is that right?
Yes.
Isn't that amazing? It's so great when you love someone's talent and they're just as much of a human being. It's so great.
But they pushed, you know, I was like, I had to up my game, you know, being on that show for. So I took this little part in this little play for a couple of months. One Saturday at the matinee, you know the matinee.
Sure.
Everything it smells like Bengay.
Right, right.
So you walk out, I do my first scene, I look in the audience, and Edie's sitting there, our makeup lady, our prop girl, they all came to watch the show.
You're kidding.
On a Saturday. Yeah. I mean, how great is that?
Oh, and that's so great.
That's what I meant, that sense of community, to be able to, and the gratitude I have, Brad, is to be able to have experienced that kind of creative setting and that kind of people caring about other people because they love them, not because, all right, you're my brother and God says we have to,
sure.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's an honor. It says a lot about you.
Nah. Well, I can't thank you enough, Greg. I had such a good time talking to you.
Well, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure, man. It's great to catch up. Thank you for being so kind and letting me work this out. It's not that I'm busy.
of course you're busy.
It's not like I had other things. I look at my head on this phone and I go, why do that to you? You've worked so hard. I'm going to find you this picture.
Oh, God, picture.
And I'm going to sign all the names, you know, because one will know. No one will know.
Oh, I have to come to Vegas. We got to eat and laugh, my friend.
We'll do that. I wish you the best. Really great to have some time with you, man. I've always been a fan, I'm glad you're doing your thing, baby.
All right, you be well, be happy, best of the family. Okay.
You as well. Thanks, Adam.
You want the job or not? See, don't ask any questions to Jilly about Frank. When you feel a tug on the cord, you're done. All right.
Oh, my gosh. He's so much fun. And I loved when he said, my name is Brad. And then the guy goes, have you ever seen someone correct Sinatra?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Greg's one funny guy. I'm just going to put that on the record right now.
He is.
And I say that as somebody who's been called Mike Stone more times than I care to remember.
Mike Stone?
Exactly. Yeah. People are like, Mike, get over here. It's Mark. Yeah, whatever. You know.
I love the fact that his mom is just like my mom and doesn't have a filter.
Yeah.
Sammy Davis is getting old. He knows he's getting old. He's actually making an apology. The chops aren't what they used to be, but we're going to get through it. Not every night can be magic.
Who says that? Who says that?
He brought it up.
I loved and hated that at the same time. I mean, come on.
Okay,
brutal honesty.
Brutal honesty. Yeah, I'm used to growing up that way, so that's why I loved it. I was embarrassed. I was like, don't say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the thing. My mother doesn't have that either. You're in their world.
I was fascinated when you said that they were in their own world. So whenever they met someone, they were like he was selling a kitchen to Don Rickles.
Yeah.
How great is that?
Yeah.
I mean, to tape that. Yeah. I wish you had a tape of that.
Oh, that was great. Like I said, my father was animated. Mark, it was my dad when I was a kid. You know, it was like, oh, look, he's back. My father's back. Oh, he's not. He's looking to make money so he can turn it on.
I could just see Rickles shaking his head saying, yeah, I got to get the Sub-Zero.
Fix that. Oh, yeah, I need a Sub-Zero. You know, I like an ice maker. We can get that, Don. That's where the money goes, right there.
I mean, with Joe, I could see him and Elvis going, hey, you want to smoke?
Yeah.
Let's go out for a smoke.
Yeah. Elvis, listen, these movies are terrible. No one's going to tell you. Clam bake? Stop it.
But we all have someone like that in our lives. And it's the filter, but it's also the like not reading the room. I mean, you don't tell Sammy Davis Jr. that. That's Sammy freaking Davis Jr. You know, but we all have people that are just like, I got to tell it like it is. I'm sorry.
No, yeah, you don't. You know what? You really don't. How about keeping it to yourself? How's that?
Yeah. Button it up. And timing is everything.
Yeah.
And couth.
And taste.
It's intact.
Yeah. The whole thing. You know, if you really love somebody, you don't bring a list to see if those are their faults. I'm just saying.
I was Googling.
I understand.
Is passive aggressive on that list, Alex? Yes. I can't find that somewhere.
But I have such an affinity for Brad as an actor. I just thought he was great on the show. And then when he played Gleason, I was just like, oh, because that's my dad. That was my dad. That's the other thing about the questions. That's where I learned it from, because I worked with my dad. Mm-hmm. And you learn the hard way. Keep your mouth shut. He don't want to hear. He's working on a job. He's trying to figure something out. If you ask him a question, you're taking him out of his focus. So I was thinking about it, like, oh, that's where I got it from.
Yeah.
But I think that was a generational thing too. Right. Like I think our fathers were that stern figure that gave you a task. You went and did it. Even if you did it wrong, that was better than like running the risk of like the wrath of asking question after question.
No, if you did it wrong, you were in trouble too. So you're damned if you do it, you're damned if you don't. It's just a question. When do you want to get yelled at? That's what when I was a kid, do I want to get yelled at now? Or do I want to get yelled at after it's over and have to do it again?
Let me ask you this. Would you get this? If you didn't ask any questions, you did it wrong. Would you get this from your dad? Mm. Why didn't you ask me how to do it?
Absolutely. What? You're not going to make the right choice.
Kobayashi Maru.
If you don't know, ask. All right, Pop, why do I do it? Hey, if I got to answer this question, I'll do it myself. I want it done. Yeah.
So I got the opposite. What? I would never get yelled at or anything like that. My dad would just look at me. Mm-hmm. And then I went, okay, maybe I should have done that better.
Right.
That's all.
You know, my dad needs to yell. I think he did. He was just like Gleason, mm-hmm, like that. Mm-hmm. But he was.
Yeah. I love that though. I love that Brad got to play that role. I mean, it's just. And you're right. He's just one of those guys that it just explodes on the screen, and whatever he's doing, even if he's off the action, your eyes are on him, and he's always a big part of the action. He's just one of those guys you love seeing. You know,
center of attention, fills the room.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Part of the list.
All right. We got to get Brad back in here to answer these questions to see if he's got the same problems I do.
Went the job or not? Come on.
Yeah. But yeah, and he was in another one of my favorite shows of all time, The Odd Couple, when I was a kid. In New York, when you grew up on the East Coast, 11 o'clock, you watch The Odd Couple, 11:30, you watch The Honeymoon, and you go to bed. Mm-hmm. When I saw that, I was like, that's the relationship. I have that relationship with Phil. He drives me insane. I drive him insane, but I love him. Mm-hmm. You know, and there was always, even when I was having dinner with Klugman, and he said there was always the teaching moment where Felix had to teach Oscar to do something, or Oscar had to teach Felix to do something. Mm-hmm. And when I was listening back to this phone call, I go, that's, you know, Phil's coming to me with a problem. I got to see if I can help him. And I'm going to come to him with my problems and see if he can help me. And we're going to yell. There's a lot of yelling in my world. I don't know why.
Yeah. It's an accent color for you.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. My mother goes, we're very passionate people, which is a romantic way of saying mentally unbalanced. That's what and poor impulse control. I think that's what she really means.
Manja.
Yeah. Just eat.
Manja. Come on. Yeah. Get some cheese.
Yeah.
But I tell you, I got the cold sweats when he told that story about blowing his second line. Opening night. I was like, oh, my God. And like, there's Nathan Lane glaring at you.
Yeah,
he was off book like the first day of rehearsal. Off book, like nobody does that.
Yeah,
Nathan Lane does, because he's a genius.
Yeah, he was great, and he was his second line opening night, and then he got.
And he just looked at him and said, you want to take that again?"
Yeah. And he was such a pro. He got him out of it.
Yeah,
and then.
Yeah.
And you know it, but he even said, he was like, every time I see him, I bring it up. And he's like, you got to let it go.
I get that too.
This isn't ship life. No one's talking about you anymore.
I don't know if I could let that go.
No, I would be obsessed about it too. And I'd be worried. I'd be like Phil. I would be worried about what people are going to think for the rest of my life. He doesn't give a shit. Nathan Lane doesn't care. But in Brad's mind, you know, that's the last moment that he thinks he remembers.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys know how much I love Nathan Lane.
I've loved your stand-up, and you're also a terrific actor.
Thank you, Nathan. Thank you so much.
Oh, my goodness.
That's still your ringtone, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And to be, just to be on that set, I mean, to be, you know, Neil Simon, you're rehearsing with Neil Simon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. God.
And I was so pleased when he said that, you know, everybody loves Raymond was like a family set, because it did come across. And I know what it means to be part of that. And it's something I'd like to do that. Yeah. Honey.
Well, that's what I've heard you say about being on the set of Rescue Me mm-hmm. on Nurse Jackie. It was like a family.
No.
And I think that when you're in an environment, anyone, mm-hmm. when they feel safe and they can trust.
Right.
There's no fear.
It's true. And yeah. and you get lunch. It's catered.
And you get lunch. And you free socks.
Well, you don't get free socks. I take the socks.
But I get it that, like, when you're in stand up, that you control everything. Yeah. And there's a confidence that comes up. You're like, I'm in command of my own destiny. And that's awesome, too. But like you guys said, you know, when I mean, the feeling that you get when you're surrounded by a great team, whether it's on a set or, say, I don't know, when you're on a podcast with someone like Alex and me, that's a pretty good team, isn't it?
You're absolutely right. This is a very good team, and I do feel very safe here. Oh, well, I did before this episode.
Love you, Adam.
Yeah.
Things can only get better.
Yes. But yeah, it's a nice place to be. And I think it's you're safe on a set. You're also only responsible for that one part of the whole, you know, when you're doing something like this. I take on the responsibility of being responsible for everybody on the podcast. So that's why when I want to get things done, I'm like, I got to make this good for everybody. Yeah. Honey.
Yeah. What you hit on another thing, what? It's teamwork.
Yeah.
So you can't have control issues if you're working with a team.
You can if you're the captain. I'll just ask you not to make that mistake again.
Oh, my goodness.
I want to thank my pal Brad Garrett for being my guest. Honey, if you want to get a hold of us, where do they go?
The Emperor at... No, just kidding. Adam Ferrara at Gmail.
Thank you guys so much for telling someone you love about the show. You know what? Tell two people. The show's growing, and it's all because of you. If you get a chance to leave us a review, that helps us with our friend...
Mr. Algorithm.
We're all in this together, brothers and sisters. Yes, we are. So please, share the road, and remember that life is hard. You take it easy on yourself. The pod has ended. Go in peace. I don't know. Stern, am I possessive?
I think you like to be, you like to have things under the realm of your control. Like, yeah. And so if like possessing things, you know, cause you have a vision in your head, I think mm-hmm. a lot of times how you want things to go, and it's easier if you have them under your control. So okay. If that's possessiveness, sure.
Okay. Clearly Mark doesn't understand the question either. What's next?
Really, Stern. What a bunch of bullshit.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.